Good morning and welcome to Covenant. The Christ candle is burning for Millard Island, our beloved friend who died yesterday early morning. We will miss him very much. Our scripture lesson comes from Mark chapter 7, verses 14 through 23. And as you listen, if you'll begin passing the envelope that you'll find on the outside of each row, in the envelope, there's a way to register your attendance with us, to let us know you're visiting so we can welcome you. And there are also celebration and concern cards. Mark 7, 14 through 23. Then Jesus called to the crowd and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside of a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile." When he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about the parable. And Jesus said to them, "Then do you also fail to understand? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile, since it enters not the heart but the stomach and goes into the sewer?" Thus he declared all foods clean. And Jesus said, "It is what comes out of a person that defiles, for it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come: theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, evil, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person." These are our sacred stories. I highly recommend spending your second week back from sabbatical at children's camp. Not only are you busy from the moment Jody wakes you and everyone else in the girls' cabin by turning on the lights and gently forcing us all from our bunks until the moment you lay back down in that bunk to sleep, exhausted from the lake and the Bible study and the pool and the interest groups and the worship and the scavenger hunts. Not just all that. Really, it's the joy of being with young theologians, considering who God is and who they are. Each day we wondered about God. What is God like? We talked about Jesus and what Jesus did, how he welcomed, how he ate with those who were shunned by others, how he handled temptation. Now, when I went to GA camp as a child in Tennessee, when I went to camp, any mention of temptation would also involve a heavy dose of guilt and shame and lots of threats of eternal damnation. There was, of course, an assurance that once saved, always saved, a concept so comforting that most of us rededicated our lives at least once each summer. I was one of the holdouts. I waited until the last night. I would sing through "Just As I Am" at least twice, and then I would move into the aisle, walk forward, and tell the camp counselor I needed to rededicate my life. We would pray a prayer, and then I would return to my seat only to take up the humming of what was now the third go at the first verse of the same song. Sometimes this process of rededication or salvation again was made easier. The week's pastor, the only male at GA camp, would ask everyone to bow their heads and close their eyes, and then invite anyone in need of prayer, of forgiveness, of salvation, to raise their hand. It sounded like this. "And now, with every head bowed and every eye closed, I want you to raise your hand if you need Jesus tonight. I see that hand. I want you to lift your hand if you are a Christian, but you've not been living right. You've been living a life of sin and are in need of forgiveness. I see that hand. There's no one looking around. If you know you want to turn back to God and rededicate your life to Christ, just go ahead and raise your hand. That's right, I see that hand and that hand. I'm praying for you, sister. If you count the hand raising, I'm sure I rededicated my life at least 15 times. It never quite took. I just kept sinning." Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. And some of you do. Nothing like that happened at children's camp this week. When we talked about temptation, we talked about what we are inspired to do and how to respond when we fail to live into our aspirations. We want to love, to welcome, to share, but sometimes we hate, we exclude, we hoard. In the sixth grade Bible study class, my class, we read the Cherokee legend we read today as our opening sentences. I asked what the students thought about it, what stuck out. Very quickly, one camper said, "You know, it's just fun to feed the evil wolf. I mean, once I'm angry, it feels, I don't know, powerful to get more and more angry." I agreed. I know just what that feels like. The travel ban, arson at a mosque, children still separated from their families, children and parents who will never be reunited, our parks and wildlife and environmental protections under threat, and hate begins to well within me, a feeding frenzy. This turned into a discussion of anger and how anger is not the same thing as hating. "Doesn't the Bible say to be angry and not sin?" one student asked. Another student, "It does? Where does it say that?" "It does say that. You're right. It's in Ephesians." And in that moment, I was grateful for the Bible drills of GA camp, grateful that the guilt and shame and talk of hell was not all there was. There was also love and care and kindness. Be angry and do not sin. It's in Ephesians. Anger can inspire us to work for change. It can get us up and out and going, working for justice. It can get us marching and calling and voting. It can get us feeding and protecting. But when that anger turns to hatred, when it blocks our compassion, when it keeps us from seeing another person, truly seeing and hearing, when it keeps us from empathy, when our anger keeps us turned outward at what someone else said or did, it's so much easier to deal with my own faults when I focus on the injustice and evil of someone else. It's so much easier to deal with racism, oppression, homophobia, injustice, sexism, when it's coming from someone else, when none of it is my fault. Jesus, in today's lection, says, "It is what comes out of a person that defiles, for it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. Evil things come from within, and they defile a person." These words are within a larger narrative about ritual cleaning and food laws. By focusing on what's inside, Jesus sidesteps a direct conversation on food laws. He doesn't say they're useless, and he doesn't say they're necessary. He says, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside that by going in can defile. The things that come out are what defile." The churches that raised me were quick to point to Satan as the instigator of all meanness, anger, jealousy, and anything else negative. People would pray to be delivered from Satan, who was causing them all kinds of grief and plaguing them with ideas to do wrong. One Sunday on the drive home, I was asking my dad about this, suggesting that it seemed like a refusal to own up to our own evil, our own cruelty, to blame it on Satan. After a long sigh, it was Sunday after church after all, and the man was tired, he said something like, "It makes it easier if it's not their fault. They feel enough guilt for the choices they can own. Let them blame a few things on Satan." It was classic Reverend Mayo the Older. My dad was always quick to find a way around any conflict. And I get what he was saying. I likely responded by quoting the church lady from Saturday Night Live. But even if I was smarmy in my response, I remember my father's effort at empathy. And if I'm honest, I need that empathy myself. While I don't blame Satan for my failings, in my personal life, I do often find a way to make something someone else's fault. I never would have done that thing that hurt your feelings if you hadn't done the thing that hurt mine in the first place, so really it's you we should all be upset with. Not only does this effort to remove myself from blame mean that I struggle sometimes to own my part in what went wrong, it also means that I'm so often caught up in making something not my fault that I miss many beautiful opportunities to work for solutions, toward better choices. I miss many chances to grow and change, and perhaps even worse, I don't provide any care for the person who's hurt. It also means that sometimes I seem disappointed with someone else when really I'm disappointed with myself. The morning after a fun evening spent outside, Owen complained that his legs were itching. I discovered to my horror that his legs were covered in mosquito bites. Immediately, I began to question him as to why he never said anything. Why didn't you tell me? I went on and on, my own guilt coming out as anger and disappointment. Finally, he said, "Mom, my legs are hurting. I'm sorry I didn't ask for bug spray." Poor kid. Sorry. I found the anti-itch cream and while rubbing it in, explained that I felt guilty. I felt guilty for his pain because I could have prevented it. That I was angry not with him, but with myself. I was blaming him to make myself feel better. Theologian Elaine Pagels writes, "The greatest and most dangerous enemy did not originate, as one might expect, as an outsider, an alien, or stranger. Satan is not the distant enemy, but the intimate enemy." Whatever we name it, we are all well aware of evil, the evils of war, of discrimination, of caged children, the evils of what we've done and are doing to our environment. And we certainly know what it is to demonize the other. We can't turn on the news without hearing suggestions that others be kept out, sent away, destroyed. How do we keep the anger that gets us moving, that helps us work for justice? How do we keep that anger, but not feed the wolf of hate? Again, those young theologians at camp, with all the wisdom of 12 years, decided that the only way forward was to work on feeding the good wolf. And to feed the good wolf, we must be willing to consider the role we play in systems of oppression, how our everyday lives benefit from injustice, our part in the systems of racism that linger in our hearts and emerge when we least expect it, the homophobia and the sexism. There is evil. There is an enemy, an intimate enemy, and so often the enemy is us. Are we willing to focus not simply on the evil and hatred and bigotry spewed from the mouths of others, but to examine our own hearts? To be open to the places within us where we're feeding the wrong wolf? And then to focus on feeding the other wolf a healthy diet of compassion and forgiveness and sharing and work for justice. The boy looked intently into his grandfather's eyes and asked, "Which one will win, grandfather?" The grandfather smiled and quietly said, "The one we feed." Amen.